Hi, everybody, and welcome to the FinOps Nexus podcast. I'm your host, John Meyer. Now, today's topic is the effective savings rate, also known as ESR. And our guest today is Hunter Harris and Garrett Dan joining us. Hunter, Garrett, thank you so much for joining me.
Great to see you again, John.
Great to see you, John and Hunter.
All right, guys. Now, we only got about 15 minutes for this, and let's jump right into it. Hunter, talk to me. What is effective savings rate?
So ESR, or effective savings rate, really it's one of the key KPIs that my team is using. It was kind of pushed forth by ProsperOps a few years ago. And the whole idea of it is giving us a better idea of how well we manage our cloud commitments. So really, how well are we operating in the cloud rate optimization pillar of FinOps? So it is that kind of single source of truth metric that we use to gauge ourselves. We use it to look at things like our compute instance, our database instance, and other costs that we have opportunities to really rate optimize.
Hunter, is this really looking at your cloud as a holistic view, like the cost that not only your savings within the cloud, the utilization? I mean, really what I'm looking at and trying to think about is the effective savings rate. Here's what it does. It gives you a percentage or how well you are doing overall within your cloud spend.
Yeah, I think one of the original problems with how people were optimizing rates is they only thought of it through the lens of coverage and utilization. Those were two different percentages. And it's like, well, what is good, right? Depending on the business, it might look different. And what people really weren't looking at as closely at was the difference between the list cost and build cost. Because at the end of the day, a lot of what we do is we try to get better discounts, right? The idea of this is it takes that into consideration, but it also really removes this vacancy cost that a lot of us see, depending on how we are managing our commitment vehicles. So it really does give you that one metric to help you measure against.
And to Hunter's point, I'll just put another example in there. With the savings metric, if each year your cloud spend kept going up and your savings kept going up, how did you know you were even doing better, right? Just because your savings improved doesn't necessarily mean, of course, that you're optimizing your cost, because you could have just grown as a business.
Garrett, the dynamics of cloud really kind of don't translate to sometimes of the savings that you're doing or the cost that you're spending into it. And Hunter talked about some of the metrics. Can you jump in and, you know, really describe what are some of the accurate ways to measure their ESR?
Yeah, so simply put, practitioners just need to round up data from their cloud vendor cost and usage report. And they just need a few key data points. One, they need to understand what their on-demand costs are. So this would, there's other terms for that, such as public cost, but this is basically just the cost of, hey, if nothing had any commitment vehicle attached to it, what would we be spending on the cloud? They also need to collect discounted cost. I believe Hunter just used the term build cost, or effective cost is, I think, used in the focus framework. Discounted cost is just the idea of like, well, this is what we're actually paying for that resource and various spend. And then understanding vacancy cost, which is the cost of underutilized commitments. So a savings plan that is not 100% utilized, or an RI that maybe isn't used anymore because we're not using those instance types. And very simply put, you take those three together and you're able to calculate what you're currently spending, and you're able to extrapolate what the on-demand spend would be, and you get to your ESR figure via a simple formula, which I could walk through as well if needed.
Well, before you walk through the formula, Hunter, talk to me a little bit more about implementing or actually visualizing your ESR. How difficult is it for companies to actually achieve it?
I think it's made to sound like it really is simple, but again, the devil is in the details with the CUR, right? With your cost and usage report. So one thing Garrett and I and our teams have spent a lot of time with is really understanding our cost and usage report, taking it in context to our organization's data, looking at it, joining it, describing the data so that we can go off and, you know, really improve our effective savings rate the right way. Right. So you don't want to go through and start buying commitments for instances that are going to go away. Right. So You want to be able to influence how that usage optimization happens, and using your CUR and ESR actually make a compelling story for why these things that you should optimize from a usage standpoint will actually help in the end with your rates as well. So we love to pivot our data around, visualize it to help make these compelling stories and then show back, this is what we did. Look at how successful we were, or maybe not how successful we were because we had a bunch of vacancy costs during these periods of our transition of usage and commitment vehicles. It just ties it all together.
And in our case, we report out an overall ESR figure across all of our spend, as well as an ESR by product for the products that we purchase commitments for.
Gary, do you want to walk us through what that formula looks like for ESR?
Yep. So very briefly put, those three key cost measures to track are on-demand cost, discounted cost, and vacancy cost. If you take the sum of discounted cost and vacancy cost subtracted by on-demand cost, and then take that final value that you just calculated, divide it by on-demand cost, and you have your ESR figure. And that'll give you your, very simply put, the percentage that you're saving off of your on-demand rates.
Garrett, this sounds like a very simple formula. Hunter, what are some of the challenges companies may see when they're trying to implement or visualize their ESR?
I think it goes back to understanding your CUR, right? And understanding where you're spending. It's hard to have conversations about your cloud costs if you're not having the conversations with the right people, right? So a lot of what Garrett and I have worked on, again, is just telling the story of our cloud spend, aligning it to cost centers, aligning it to customers, aligning it to environments, aligning it to parts of the business to really show what is happening and then breaking it down. So if you think of, you know, in our real world scenario, right, we did a project where we said, hey, we're going to go after our Amazon RDS effective savings rate, right? We know we can, we believe we can optimize this rate. We started looking at it, right? And we said, okay, well, who should we talk to? The reality is we have RDS running in over 160 AWS accounts at any given point during a day, right? Those align to over 39 cost centers. So I have a bunch of different people that I have to talk to. We are running, I think it's like 3,800 databases at any given point in the day, right? We've got 30 different RDS instance types. We've got 6 different database engines, right? When you think of having to buy these commitments for how RDS is managed, it becomes very hard, right? Then you start thinking about regions too. And it's like, well, we're across almost every AWS region. Holy crap, right? Like, what? How are we going to do this? So again, going back to how we look at our data, we show the data. We understand what part of the business this goes to. We understand where most of the usage is. We look at what's consistent over time, both in like daily, weekly, and monthly data. And then we start making more educated decisions on how we're going to go about it. So really our case was we looked at it, we looked at ESR, we looked at coverage, we looked at where we had vacancy historically, and we came up with a plan for how we could tackle it. We saw that our current coverage was around 43%, which is pretty low across our whole business. And we said, well, generally we want to be buying our commitments against production because we know these are longer serving workloads. Well, how much of that coverage was actually against production? And it was actually relatively high, right? Well, what instance types are there? What regions? All this. So we started formulating it, right? We started looking at our effective savings rate across all these things. And then we came up with our plan of attack for how we would do it. And really that combined with other like usage optimization initiatives too, where we said, we know we are going to move off of our older Intel-backed instance types to Graviton. Well, what's our strategy? What's our timeline? How are we going to partner with our cloud service provider to make sure that we migrate these workloads, we buy our reservations at the right time period so we don't have vacancy cost? Because at the end of the day, moving to Graviton was going to benefit AWS. It was going to benefit us. It was going to be a great case study of being one of the largest RDS customers, moving these workloads and also optimizing our rates and just having a good partnership. So we were able to show all of that through it. And we exited with going from like an ESR of 15% to being over 40% now. We went from a coverage of, Garrett, it was around, I think I said 40, 43%, something like that. We're at over 82% now. And that's across all of our RDS database instance usage, right? So we got to our end state really well. And again, just understanding these intricate details really helped show the story and show the overall benefit of it.
Garrett, did you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I'll say another common challenge, really, like Hunter, we were able to gain confidence in committing to more because of how we were able to explain the ESR impact. And so a common challenge that other people will face is when they come to new commitment purchase decisions, it can be difficult to improve your ESR when your only opportunity to do so is when existing commitments are expiring. So if the only time you have to like try and improve your savings rates is when something's expiring during such a tight window, you're constantly trying to seek approval or get validation that you're allowed to commit to more or cover more. And being able to explain the shift in ESR during those times can be crucial to like rapidly reaching consensus and being like, okay, this is actually a good idea. To take that next step. And I think with Hunter's whole example of improving coverage of RDS, being able to show exactly where we were and where we'll be going, was crucial to getting the buy-in from our leaders.
Hunter, you mentioned that your ESR went from 15 up to about 40, 42%. Is there an optimal percentage per company, or is it unique for each individual company and their utilization?
I think it's unique. I really do, because it's going to come down to really the recurring revenue that you have, the cyclical nature of your business, how really efficient you manage your usage, how advanced you are when you're looking at your usage and your rates, really. So what we were able to do is the biggest way we improved our ESR, first of all, we went from 1 year to 3 year vehicle. That's a huge way to improve your ESR. But we were only able to do that, like Garrett was talking about, by gaining the confidence of the rest of the business for how we manage our commitments, right? So showing where we got the best discounts, where we were targeting it, right? Taking this huge portfolio of cloud usage, being able to get extremely granular, gave everyone the confidence, right? So I don't know if there is truly a target ESR that you can achieve. I think it does matter in context to your business. I think that we should all be able to get over 20% in aggregate. But again, it is a function of coverage, vacancy, and everything else. We minimized our vacancy when it comes to database, right? We really squashed that completely. I checked today, we have no vacancy cost when it comes to database spend.
Yeah, piggybacking on Hunter, I guess that maybe 20%, Hunter said anyone can achieve 20%, and I think on a product that you can cover, I think that's possible. But what I'll say even further from that, like if I can extrapolate a theoretical example here, is trying to determine what your specific max ESR could possibly be. A very simple way you could do that is look at your usage profile and understand what of that is coverable. So if you use services and you have an example where half of the services you use can even be covered by a commitment vehicle, then theoretically you could only get to a max of 50% coverage of your overall usage, right? And so what would your ESR be from that point? So you can kind of back into this like concept of what our max ESR could be based on what just your usage profile is and what you can cover within that. And so two organizations that have different usage profiles, one may find it very easy to get over a total 20% ESR figure, whereas others maybe will struggle to get even to 10% just based on their usage profile. So it's highly dependent on what services you use the most and how you use them and where you use them and what instance types. But understanding how far you could go is probably the easiest way to get like a benchmark territory for your organization.
Yeah, I agree with what Garrett's saying, right? The aggregate ESR against your cloud spend is highly dependent on your usage, right? So where we are, right? We use a lot of compute. We use a lot of database, right? It makes up more than 50% of our aggregate spend. So that makes it easier for us to achieve higher levels. We like to also look at it from an AWS product family portfolio standpoint and say, hey, we know our aggregate ESR. What is our compute instance ESR? What is our database instance ESR? What is our open search instance ESR? Looking at it that way as well, breaking down those vehicles where you can actually buy commitments, like Garrett was saying.
So Hunter, the ESR is going to be unique per product or services, and then there's going to be an overall ESR for all of your services?
That's how we look at it. So it helps.
Is there a right and wrong way to look at that from a company perspective? Like, do I take all these numbers and I say, okay, you know what, for my entire company, my ESR is X, or do I look at for my compute, my ESR is this, and I can do my RDS, I can do my Elasticsearch, all these will have different ESRs?
I think you should, personally, and I think Garrett would agree.
Yeah, so we will track that ESR by product, and we report it out, and ESR by product is, I mean, for us, when we're making purchasing decisions, that's, you have to use it, right? Because that's how you explain, we're going to boost our ESR within this product family or service by, you know, X, right? And then when you have that overall ESR number, you can use that to instantly plug into other unit metrics like ESR adjusted cost per environment or ESR, you know, you can apply ESR to those other metrics that you're already collecting to be able to, you know, kind of explain the rate optimization effect of all those other KPIs that FinOps tracks. So it's kind of a dual, you need both, in my opinion. Yeah.
Yeah. If we could show you our data, right, which we can't, but like, if you looked at it that way, if we went back to, you know, Q1 of 2021, our aggregate ESR may have been 12%, right? If I break that down though and look at how we were doing, I know that, hey, our compute was 27%. Our database was, I'm trying to look and see what it was. It was about 5% back then, right? In telling that story over time of how we improved our ESR, our aggregate ESR, to where our aggregate is now, you know, north of 25% across our spend, it is completely a function of managing those commitments, but also how our usage profiles change as a business. We're changing a lot, right? We've talked about usage optimization. We've talked about rate optimization. Those two intersecting, that is really why ESR helps understand. So you can make very compelling cases. You can make very compelling cases for architectural change from going from like a, say, a managed service on AWS or Google, where you maybe cannot get, you know, a commitment rate discount, to, hey, I'm going to move this onto EC2, where I can achieve north of a 40% ESR and actually get a better net rate, right? We're looking at it in a whole aggregate portfolio standpoint. So it really helps us with forecasting, budgeting, all of our contract negotiation, et cetera.
Well, Hunter, Garrett, I got to wrap things up. This has been an awesome discussion on effective savings rate, also known as ESR. Hunter, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, John. Can't wait to do it again.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, my man. Garrett, thank you so much for joining me on your first FinOps Nexus podcast. Yeah. Hopefully there's more.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing you again.
All right, everybody, this has been the FinOps Nexus podcast. We were talking about the effective savings rate. Don't forget to hit that like, subscribe, and notify, because guess what? We're out of here.